हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहना भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे.
So continuing with Nyayaratna and Vaishnavdasa's conversation. Nyayaratna, why do so many low-class people embrace the Vaishnava religion, Vaishnava Das? There is no doubt of that. Many low-class people are naturally very humble, and for this reason the Vaishnavas consider them good candidates for their mercy. No one can become a Vaishnava without first receiving the mercy of the Vaishnavas. Persons who are intoxicated with pride of caste, pride of wealth, or other kinds of pride cannot be humble. For them, it is very difficult to attain the mercy of the Vaishnavas. Nyayaratna, I don't like to know any more about it. I can see that eventually you will quote some hard words from the scriptures. It gives my heart great pain to hear these words. Words like these are the Varaha Purana. In the Kali Yuga, demons take birth in the family of the Brahmanas. I don't like to talk about these things. Now please say why you have no respect for our Sri Shankara Swami, who is a shoreless ocean of spiritual knowledge. Vaishnava Das, why do you say that? We say that Sri Shankara Swami is an incarnation of Lord Shiva himself. Sriman Mahaprabhu taught us to honor him with the title Acharya. The only thing is that we do not accept the Mayavad philosophy. The Mayavad philosophy is not the religion taught in the Vedas. Actually, it is covered Buddhism. In order to give the demons a stable life, by the Supreme Lord's order, the Acharya distorted the true meaning of the Vedas, Vedanta and Bhagavad Gita, and taught the Advaita Vada, the philosophy of an impersonal God. Is the Acharya at fault for that? Do people criticize him? Buddha was an incarnation of the Supreme Lord. He preached a philosophy opposed to the Vedas. Do the followers of the Vedas criticize him? If someone says, it is not good for the Supreme Lord and the demigod Shiva to act in that way, then I reply, why not? They are never cruel or unjust. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, the protector of the universe, and his assistant, Lord Shiva, are both all-knowing and the givers of all good. They are never cruel or unjust. Their actions have a deep purpose. The small individual souls have no power to understand. Therefore, they should not be criticized, because they are not intelligent enough to understand the purpose of the Lord. People may criticize him, saying, "It is not good for the Supreme Lord to act in this way. He should have acted in that way." Intelligent people never talk like that. Why was the impersonalist philosophy needed then to control the demoniac people? Only the all-powerful Lord knows. Why is there a need to create the various life forms and then destroy them at the end? We have not the power to know. These are the pastimes of the Lord. Persons who are devoted to the Lord feels bliss to hear of his pastimes. They are not eager to say the Lord acted wrongly or to question the virtue of the Lord's actions. So here's Nyayaratna, because he was asking about, you know, the quality of the Brahmins and why the Vaishnavas and the Brahmins don't get along. And why is it the great Brahmins are not accepting Vaishnava philosophy? So he pointed out that the great Brahmins, so many great Brahmins became Vaishnavas. And then he asked why so many low-class people have taken up. And he says because many of them, they're humble. And because they're humble, then they're able to appreciate and take the teachings, you know, the mercy of the Vaishnavas. While those who are proud of their birth, good wealth, education, and this, they have great trouble taking up this Vaishnava philosophy because of their pride. So then he said, you know, okay, so we'll stop the conversation here because now that you've gotten into this area, because they know that these things are there, but they just ignore, you know, stay away from them. So she was thinking that now you're going to quote things like the demons take birth in the Brahmin families and all kinds of things like this. You know, this quotes that a chandala who is a devotee is better than a Brahmin who's not a devotee. You know, all these kind of verses are there. So he didn't want to discuss that. So then he says, okay, so why do you not respect Lord Shiva? But we respect, it's just his philosophy is not accepted. Because it had a purpose. It was for, stabilizing the demons. Because it means that those who were against the Vedic literatures, then to bring them back to the Vedic literature. So therefore, since they were Buddhists, then Buddhism was presented, but in such a way it brought them to the Vedas instead of against the Vedas. So Buddhism was basically described in terms of Vedic example and terminology, as opposed to being done by non-Vedic, you know, just by logic. So then he's pointing out that someone may say, well, why does the Lord act like this? But neither do people feel, I mean, he's saying that people will feel bad towards, or we feel bad towards Shiva, but we don't. Even if we don't accept the philosophy, doesn't mean that we have anything bad to say about him. Just as Buddha is an incarnation of Krishna, and he took people away from the Vedas, we don't criticize, we understand the purpose. So the same way as we understand Shankara's purpose, but we don't accept the philosophy, just like we don't accept Buddhism. Like that. And so then intelligent persons never criticize. They won't say, he should have done it like this, that, because the Lord's plan is very great, so we cannot understand all these things, why so many things are there. Creates the universe, destroys the universe, makes so many species of life. So much is there, you know. So he understands it, and we're here to be reformed.
It seems that we're very much at the mercy of the Acharya of the time. And when Shankaracharya was here, that was the prevalent philosophy, and when Buddha was here, that was the understanding. But then, as it changes right now in Gautama's time.
Yeah, because see, the Acharya comes at the time when a certain activity or philosophy or something's to be presented. Because then those people are present at that time. Just like at the end of Kali Yuga, then the Kalki avatar comes. You don't find greatly pious people then. You know, you find very impious people. So then it's natural then the Lord will then come and perform those pastimes. So according to the desires of the living entity, then they appear in the different times, and then for them, then the particular acharyas, then they come. But at any time, then pure devotional service is present. You know, it's always there. It's just a matter of where to find it. You know, whether one is able to find it, because it's always there. But many times we see it's because people aren't interested, then they get those kind of situations and acharyas. Does that make sense?
There's something that to me doesn't make sense with Narayana Ratna. When he said that, again, they're going to quote verses from the scriptures which basically will prove that I'm wrong, how can he go forth from there? He said, like, it's like he admits defeat.
In that one area, because he's asked the question, he's asked them to give answers, so therefore then he can't complain. You know, he can't complain. Because he's come to them. It means Vaishnava Das didn't go to him, he came to Vaishnava Das. So they're gentlemen, so they know how to properly behave. They're not, it means nowadays they'll, you know, bother and this and that, but previously they would know how to behave. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So then, so Nyayaratna, then he appreciated what he said about Shankara. Good, but then why do you say that the Mayavad philosophy is against the teaching of the Vedas and the Vedanta Sutra? Vaishnava Das, if you carefully consider the Vedas and the Vedanta Sutra, then please tell me which mantras and which sutras support the Mayavad conclusion. I will show the proper interpretation of all those mantras and sutras. It may seem that some Vedic mantras show a dim reflection of the Mayavad philosophy. However, when we look at what precedes and follows those mantras, in a moment the Mayavad interpretation flees far away. Because it's interesting, is there, Shankara, he doesn't comment on everything. He comments on those verses that can be given, twisted, to give that interpretation. And then he says, like this you understand. In other words, understand this is the principle, and then you go on studying, and then you will you see things in this light. But he only commented on certain verses. And then, as he says now, is that if you look at the verses before and after, you'll see that in the context of the situation that the Mayavad philosophy doesn't stand. Therefore, he just picked certain verses like that. He didn't comment on all the verses of Vedanta Sutra like that. Other acharyas comment on every verse. He didn't comment on every verse like that. Nyayaratna. My brother, I never studied the Upanishads and the Vedanta Sutra. I can study anything about the Nyaya Shastra. No, I can discuss anything about the Nyaya Shastra. In that debate, I can turn a clay pot into a piece of cloth, and a piece of cloth into a clay pot. I read a little of the Gita, but I did not really enter into it. I read a little of the Gita, but I did not really enter into it. Here I must stop. Well, I would like to say one more thing. You are a great pundit, so you can give a good answer. Why do the Vaishnavas have faith only in the prasadam remnants of Lord Vishnu and not the remnants of the demigods and demigoddesses? Okay. So here he said, I don't know these things, so therefore he will stop the discussion there. Because otherwise then he's saying what's wrong with the interpretation of the Vedanta Sutra. But he doesn't know it, so he wouldn't be able to properly discuss it. Nyaya he knows, but like he says, nyaya means you can just prove one thing's another. So he can turn a clay pot into a piece of cloth and a piece of cloth into a clay pot. He can prove Vaishnav Das, right? Like you could say, a pot is something that holds something, but then a piece of cloth holds something, so therefore it's a pot. You know? And the cloth surrounds, so the pot is surrounding what's inside, so it's a piece of cloth. So therefore, how do you describe your cloth? You understand? How do you describe a pot? You understand? Mm-hmm. What would you say?
I would say, after hearing that, I would say it's hard.
So is the floor. So is a piece of wood. See, this is the thing with the Nyaya Shastra, is that the definition has to be so exact it just means that. You say it holds things, so does a box. So does our mouth. So do our lungs. They hold, you know, so what holds? So is that a pot? You know, like this. So that's the thing. It's very, very difficult to properly establish, according to Nyaya, the things. Because you have to get something that it simply means that. That definition only means that and doesn't mean anything else. So that is.
And they relate this logic to spiritual things?
They don't know spiritual things. They use it, but they don't know spiritual things. For them, logic is everything. That's why he's a Nyayas, but at the same time, he's also a Devi worshipper. He worships demigods. Because technically, it won't completely satisfy them. Because you can argue, but what's the purpose of your arguing? What are you going to, by arguing, what will you win? You know, unless you just take logic as your goal of life, but then you can't be a grihastha. Because then the intelligence and wrangling is your process and goal. So you couldn't be a grihastha. So a grihastha then could use it as a technique, but would have to have some other aspect of philosophy or that for their lifestyle. And therefore they have both. They would have to have both. That makes some sense?
So for a Nyaya logician, family life is out of the question?
If he's going to follow Nyaya as his complete process and goal, then how he would be. By Nyaya, you do not have, there's no sacrifice. And by that, then without sacrifice, there's going to be no artha. And without artha, there's not going to be no kama. So therefore, the dharma has to be performed. So logic is in the realm of jnana. It's in the realm of the intelligence. So it can't be considered. It will not be. It's not something that a grihastha could follow for his lifestyle. You understand? Just like the those who are Vedantists, the sannyasis who just study Vedanta. Then how they'll maintain a family? You can't just sit down and study Vedanta all day. You know, it doesn't work. It's not a lifestyle. Therefore, they have to take up the activities of karma. You know, jnana is not a lifestyle. Jnana is for sannyasis, like that. So the pure nyaya would also be very hard. You know, unless you use something else, you use begging, you use some other lifestyle. Like that. So these persons, then they're smartest, so then they use their yagyas and pujas and worship the demigods. Like that. So something has to be used. You know, they do things for others, puja for others, or teach that. Something has to be used. But in its pure form, it won't function. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay, so questions. Why? And so he appreciates that he's a pundit. He knows and he can give good answers. So he wants to know why the Vaishnavas only have faith in Vishnu's remnants and not in the demigods and demigoddesses. Vaishnav Das, I am not a pundit, I am a great fool. If I can speak nicely, that is only because of the mercy of my Paramahamsa Gurudev. Everyone should know that. The ocean of the scriptures has no shore. No one can study all the scriptures. My Gurudev churned the ocean of the scriptures and gave me the cream of their final conclusions. In knowing that which he teacheth, I know that what he teaches is the final conclusion of all the scriptures. The answer to your question is this. The Vaishnavas do not disrespect the prasadam remnants of the demigods and the demigoddesses. Sri Krishna is the only supreme god. The other demigods and demigoddesses are his obedient devotees. The Vaishnavas respect the prasadam remnants left by the devotees of the Lord. They do not disrespect them. By accepting the prasadam remnants left by the devotees, one attains pure devotion to the Lord. The dust of the Lord's devotee's feet, the nectar water that has washed the devotee's feet, and the nectar food that has touched the devotee's lips. These three are all very wonderful and delightful. They should certainly be accepted. Here is the truth. If an impersonalist worships a demigod and offers food and other things to him, the demigod will not accept the worship, the food, or any other offering, because the person making the offering is contaminated by the impersonalist philosophy. There is abundant proof of that in the scriptures. If you like, I can quote. The worshippers of the demigods are mostly impersonalists. The demigod prasadam they offer destroys devotional service and creates an offense before Bhakti Devi, the goddess of devotion. The pure Vaishnava offers the prasadam tasted by Lord Krishna to a demigod or demigoddess. That demigod or demigoddess happily accepts that prasadam and dances with joy. The Vaishnava then takes that prasadam, he becomes filled with happiness. Look, the commands given by the scriptures are most important. It is written in the Yoga Shastra that a person practicing yoga should not accept the prasadam of any demigod. This does not mean that a person practicing yoga should disrespect the prasadam remnants offered to the demigods. It merely means that renouncing these remnants is helpful for yoga meditation. In the same way, if a person is engaged in devotional service, and accepts prasadam remnants offered to any but the Lord he worships, the devotee cannot attain unalloyed devotion to his Lord. This does not mean that he disrespects the prasadam remnants offered to the demigods. Please know then that this is ordered by the scriptures and is meant only to attain a particular good. Yeah, the difficulty comes is that if the devotees are worshipping the demigod, they'll offer everything to Krishna, and then after that, what offered to them as devotees, then remnants are taken. But those who are the worshippers of the demigods, generally we see they're all impersonalists. They don't accept the Supreme Lord, and the demigods, being devotees of the Supreme Lord, they're not going to accept this worship. How they'll accept the worship of somebody who doesn't accept their worshipable deity, you know, and accepts them as the supreme as that. So therefore, they don't accept it. And then he makes the other point is that you want to attain to a certain goal. So therefore, you stick to that goal. You accept what is within that line. So in the yoga practice, you're not accepting the prasadam of any demigod because you're trying to get to Vishnu. Like that, he's the worshipable deity, so you focus there. So in the same way then, in the devotional process, then Krishna being the supreme, therefore then his prasadam is. That it's for a particular goal. So this way you can say it nicely. Nyayaratna, good, I accept that answer. Why do you reject the animal sacrifices prescribed in the scriptures? Vaishnav Das, the scriptures do not teach that one should kill animals. The scriptures declare, don't do violence to any creature. With these words, the Vedas prohibit violence to animals. As long as he is in the grip of the modes of passion and ignorance, a man will yearn to associate with women, eat meat, and drink liquor. He does not wait to hear the Vedas' command. He's got to hear what the Vedas command him before he does these things. The purpose of the Vedas is this. As long as a man is not situated in the mode of goodness, a man will not be able to renounce killing animals, drinking liquor, and yearning for the touch of a woman. It is to curb these propensities that the scriptures prescribe association with a woman in marriage, killing animals in sacrifice, and drinking liquor at certain ceremonies. In these ways, a man's indulgence is in these things is curtailed, and at the end he becomes able to renounce them completely. That is the purpose of the Vedas. The Vedas do not really teach that one should kill animals. That is described in these words of Srimad Bhagavatam 11.5.11. In this material world, the conditioned soul is always inclined to sex, meat-eating, and intoxication. Therefore, religious scriptures never actually encourage these activities. Although the scriptural injunctions provide for sex through sacred marriage, for meat-eating through sacrificial offerings, and for intoxication through the acceptance of ritual cups of wine. Such ceremonies are meant for the ultimate purpose of renunciation. Therefore, the Vaishnavas do not protest if men in the modes of passion and ignorance kill animals in these circumstances. However, men in the mode of goodness should not perform such activities. To be violent to others is the way of the animals. Sri Narad Muni describes the way of the animals in these words, Srimad Bhagavatam 1.13.47. Those who are devoid of hands are prey for those who have hands. Those devoid of legs are prey for the four-legged. The weak are the sustenance of the strong, and the general rule holds that one living being is food for another. Manu also explains, Manu Samhita 5.56, everyone in material life is attracted to furthering the way of attachment, Pravritti Marg. But the greatest treasure is to be gained by following the path of detachment, Nivritti Marg. So, so, for those in the mode of passion and ignorance, then there are rituals to bring them into line by the performance, by ritualistic engagement in these activities. But we see that it's just like here, is that the living entity is interested in sex, so therefore marriage is there, so that gets rid of illicit sex. So sex is there, according to religious principles, for the procreation of children. Then it is brought into line, so it is there, but it is controlled. And by that control, and then by understanding and good association, one gives those things up. So in the same way as meat-eating and intoxication, then they are controlled. and then they are brought into line. But we can see how much control is there. If we take sex and reduce it down to sex for children, that's a great reduction. So in the same way is also meat and this and that. What animals, the animals people eat nowadays are not edible according to the Vedic literature. You can't eat these things. Cows are not edible. Pigs are not edible. You know, the wild boars, the ones with those big tusks, those maybe, but the village pigs, the ones that sit in the sewer and all that, they're not edible. Chickens aren't edible. None of these can be offered in sacrifice. Therefore, only certain animals can be offered in sacrifice. And they can only be killed according to the religious principles. Right? Then they have to be offered in certain sacrifices, and then after proper, you know, ritual and everything, then that is taken. So then by that it's not sin. It means they won't go to hell for that. But it doesn't mean that they don't get the reaction for that. It means in the next life, mangsha means I kill you, you kill me. So that means this life you've killed that animal, next life you'll be the animal, they'll be the human, they'll kill you. That remains. That stays. But they won't go to hell. If they're killing the animals for their own purposes, then they go to hell along with that. You know? So these things then are, you know, it's just like sex. If it is reduced, then you won't go to hell for illicit sex. But it doesn't mean you're not going to become entangled in the desires for sex. Like that. So these things are there. So people in the modes of passion and ignorance, if they follow these principles, then they're gradually elevated. Gradually, meaning maybe over lifetimes or millions of lifetimes. So if one wants to go, if one is situated in goodness, these things are given up. They're not for those people. And for the Vaishnavas, definitely, because they bind one to the world. One wants to get out of this world, then that is the purpose. So these things are there for those purposes. So therefore, those following it, then it's not minded, if they're following. But nowadays, who is following? That is the difficulty. Okay, so that gets rid of the animal sacrifices. Because the animal sacrifices aren't recommended. Those are for those who can't avoid these things. So then they're there. But actually what's recommended is worship of the Supreme Lord. Yeah, and then this point is that one living entity is the food of another. So everything's happening through the living entities. Is everybody's eating someone else. That's the problem. So therefore, if you eat who you're supposed to be eating, then that is bona fide. You know, like for humans, they're eating the grains, their vegetables, the fruits, like this. Then if they do that, and according to sacrifice, then it's good. In other words, one has to take the remnants of sacrifice. So then these are there, prescribed for humans. Because human is supposed to be situated in goodness, and from goodness to transcendence. For being absorbed in the modes of passion ignorance, the animals are much better. But if there's a human being who can't work on that platform, then these things are there. But it must be according to sacrifice, so it can't be speculative. You know? So therefore, you know, and in this age, those animal sacrifices can't be performed. Because the mantras have to be perfect. Otherwise, because it's a karma activity, if the karma is not perfect, you don't get the result. Spiritual activities, if it's not perfect, you still get result, because it's the mood that's important. But in these materialistic activities, the method itself is important. If it's wrong, then the whole thing's wrong. That's all. There's, you don't have the fallback on it was done in devotion. No. If there's any mistake, there's a mistake. That's it. It doesn't have anything else. So then in this age you don't have the Brahmins who can chant the mantras, so therefore it's not allowed. So in this age anyway, there's no animal sacrifices, therefore in this age there's no meat eating. Also in this age one can't do these soma sacrifices, so therefore in this age there's no intoxication. is they would do these soma yajnas, and from the soma then the Brahmin could take one drop. If he takes more than that, he's fallen. So that's the limit of his intoxicating beverages. You know. So like this, then you know, and generally people don't worry about it so much because then they'll rather go to the heavenly planets. And then they don't have restrictions there. So then because they're on the mode of goodness, then they are careful. That's the thing. You know? And only if they're indiscriminate, then they end up with problem, like Nala Kuvara and Manigrida. They were indiscriminate. They got cursed. So they were thrown out of the heavenly planets. Like this. That's the one example. Here's another example. What's it, Rupa? Narad Muni in this life is a Gandhara. Upa something. Upa Vahana or something. Upa Barhana. So then he was, you know, so much engaged with the women to the point of, you know, stupidity that the demigods cursed them to fall out of the heavenly planets. You know, so therefore, even there, they have to be situated in goodness and be controlled. Though there's no reaction, no sin, all those things. Okay. So that's the interesting thing, is that there is no such thing as unrestricted. Like that. It just doesn't happen. So those things are all avoided. So the only thing left is in this age, then marriage is a right that is, how do you say it? Recommended. Like that. Okay, so that then clears that one. Now Nyayaratna is asking the next point. Good. Why do the Vaishnavas object to performance of Shraddha and other rituals to repay the debts one owes to his ancestors? Vaishnava Das. If men who follow the Karmakanda rituals of the Vedas perform the Shraddha ceremony, the Vaishnavas have no objection. However, the scriptures do say this, Srimad Bhagavatam 11.5.51. Anyone who takes shelter of the lotus feet of Mukunda, the giver of liberation, giving up all kinds of obligation, and has taken to the path in all seriousness, owes neither duties nor obligations to the demigods, sages, general living entities, family members, mankind, or forefathers. The conclusion, then, is that devotees who have surrendered to the Lord do not need to perform Karmakanda Shraddha ceremonies to repay the debts they owe to their ancestors. They worship the Lord, offer the Lord's prasadam to their ancestors, and then honor that prasadam with their family. That is the Shraddha ritual they perform. Okay, so because here, then, they have to offer, there's a whole very elaborate section. I think one whole chapter of the Manu is given to the Shraddha ceremony. Because it's very, very particular, like that, on how to offer. So if one sees, one could basically understand it's not possible to perform in this age. But if someone is following, then the Karmakanda, then they are doing, then there's no objection. That is fine. Because that's naturally the path they're taking. So they have to take the difficulty it takes to go through all those things. But here it says, because the living entity has duties, debts he owes people for being here. That here, so it mentions, we have no duties or obligations to the demigods. Because the demigods, they run everything. You know, the light, the air, the water, you know, the earth. Everything that's there that we take advantage of, that is coming from the demigods. The demigods are arranging that. Then the sages are giving us the scriptures and the understanding of the scriptures so that we can perform all of the duties that we get in the benefit of the demigods and we live prosperously. So we owe them a debt. The general living entities, because we take without them, then how you'll have a whole society. We're not just on our self. Like that. All living entities means all, because trees and plants and all, we're getting benefit from all of them. family members because of the interactions and what we're gaining from them. Humankind, then that's there, and of humankind, and the head is the Brahmins. You know, the whole social structure. And then the forefathers, it's we're in a particular family because we have forefathers. If there were no forefathers, then we wouldn't be in that family. So we owe them a debt also. Like, because they had the children who then have had us. You know, or the father is a forefather, you know, grandfather's forefather. Because of them, then we have this birth in this particular family. And therefore it has that particular facility, that particular prestige, that particular opportunities, all that is coming. You know, so all these persons' debts are owed to. Like that. We owe to all of these persons. So the devotees, because they worship the Supreme Lord, and all others are his servants, and they are all the manifestation of his energies. Therefore, all these duties are not, we don't have those obligations. Like that. If you want to get something from there, then to that degree, then yes. You want to get something from family and life, then you owe something to the family for taking care. You have to, for them reciprocating, that something is there. But to go back to Godhead, it's not necessary. All in the Karmakanda, without having performed Bene Grihastha, had his son, performed all these duties and all these rituals, sacrifices and shraddhas, feeding the Brahmins, doing all these things, there's no question that one will go to the heavenly planets. One can't. Like that. One cannot do that. One can step out of the loop and not perform Karmakanda, go to Jnanakanda and for liberation. That one can do. But if one oneself wants to go to the heavenly planets, and one doesn't perform all these duties for the forefathers and others, one will not get there. One will not get there. And it's just the way it is. Because the forefathers want to be in the heavenly planets. You go to the heavenly planets without taking care of them, one will not make it. It's very simple. So therefore they have to do all these things, and therefore they talk so strongly about it. But that's their path. Their path is to go to the heavenly planets. If you're going beyond, it's not necessary. Like that. If one's going for liberation, and if one's going beyond that, then... But jnana is not obtained without without karma. By karma, then one gets knowledge. Then one gets detachment. Then only you can take up the path of jnana. Therefore, you see, generally those in the path of jnana have been karmakandis to begin with. That's why generally you can say karmakandis are impersonalists. Like that. Vaishnavas are in a different category. Because, you know, today's karmakandi is tomorrow's impersonalist. You know, is jnanakandi. Like this. So those aspects. Yeah.
Alright. Sometimes we see in the life of devotees that those activities are there, like Lord Chaitanya, he shrouded at the ceremony for his father, and he's also very close to his mother. And was it Dhruva Maharaj?
He was close to his mother, but that didn't mean he didn't take sannyas. You know what I'm saying? Being respectful to the mother, serving the mother, and then being just mundanely attached to or under the control of the mother, they're two different things. Respecting women and being under the control of women are two different things. You understand? Generally, many times you see is those who respect women, they're not under their control. And those who are under their control do not respect them. It's a very common thing. Of course, you have those who are trying to be out of, you know, brahmacharis and like that. They may disrespect the women, but generally you'll see those brahmacharis don't last as brahmacharis. Because disrespect and attachment go together. Respect and detachment go together. You understand? Respect and detachment are pious. Disrespect and attachment are impious. They go together, so they're matched. So those who are respectful, they can go beyond. Those who are not are caught. So that's nice. So for the Vaishnavas, then when they perform, as they offer the Lord's prasadam to the ancestors, and then after them they... It means they offer prasad to the Lord, and then offer some of that to the ancestors, and then the family and all that, they all take prasad. So that's the ritual shrad that they perform. They don't perform these other shrads. There's a different kind of shrad like that, where you feed Brahmins, and through the mouth of the Brahmins, whatever you feed them, that's sent to the ancestors. Okay. But here is you offer prasad, you offer prasad to the Lord, take that prasad and offer it. So then that is offered, and then that frees them from all, you know, anything. So that's what we do. Nyayaratna. When is one qualified to act in that way? Vaishnavdas. On the day when one has faith in the descriptions of Lord Hari and the holy name of Lord Hari, one is counted as a Vaishnava. This is described by the Supreme Lord Himself in these words, Srimad Bhagavatam 11:29. As long as one is not displeased by fruit of activity, as long as one has no faith in hearing about me, one has to follow the rituals of the Veda. This is a very important point. Is that... So he's asked, okay, now you're saying, because he asked why these karmakanda rituals aren't done, the shraddha and these other things. Then he's saying, because we're worshipping the Lord. You know, so therefore the Vaishnavas don't do it. And then he's asked, so when is one qualified to act like that? Because you're taking up a higher principle, because he's given shastra. But if you're on a lower level, how you'll do that? This is the point. So then, therefore, he's saying, when is one qualified? Otherwise, you may stuck in the middle. You're not performing the Vedic, but you don't actually have the qualification to perform the Vaishnava path. So when does one have? So then he said, when you have faith in the Lord's descriptions and in the holy name of the Lord. It means, in other words, when you have faith in the Lord's form and the Lord's, you know, His name, form, qualities, and pastimes, then you're counted as a Vaishnava. Then you can follow. So he says, as long as you are very much absorbed in fruit of activities, and as long as one has no faith in hearing about me, one has to follow the ritual of the Vedas. So we see here, one may have faith in hearing about me, but he also has great faith in fruit of activity. He has to follow the Vedic rituals. So this idea, oh, we're devotees, we don't care for the rules, but the person has great faith in fruit of results. He has to follow the rules and regulations. This is the crux. To not do this is sinful. This is the mentality of the impious. This is the impious mentality. Is, I'll do whatever I like. Saying we chant Hare Krishna, but then how much is chanting? Chanting means you have full faith in the Lord's activities and all these things. And you don't have faith in material fruitive result. If you have fruit, I will work, I will get the result with that, then we will be happy. Then you have to follow the rules of the Vedas in accordance to how to perform those occupational duties, how to be a grihastha, how to perform the economic development. It has to fall within the four categories, Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. It has to fall, otherwise it's sinful. You know? And even if one says, well, this is my lifestyle, I am sinful, I'm a tribal, okay, great. Now, but still you have to offer the results to Krishna. Are the results offered? Then that's purified. But then one should acknowledge that we're acting below the human platform. We're acting within the realm of the tribal, the outcast. Okay, we accept. But so one has to be honest. One can't say that in this age, this, that, this, that. You go out and get a job, it's a shudra work. So you have to act like a proper shudra. You can't misbehave at the job and then expect that you're going to get paid. You have to serve whoever you're doing. You have to be, you know, trying for the benefit of whoever you're working for. You know, whatever's connected with the company, you have to be properly respectful to them. You have to take on the proper attitude that they like. Then it's proper. Then it's proper. But to say you're just going to do whatever you like, then this mentality is not proper. It's neither devotional nor Vedic. And so if it's not devotional or not Vedic, that means it is non-Vedic, so means it is sinful. It's that simple. It's demoniac.
That's all. It's a very simple formula, but like Nyaya Ratna didn't want to hear about the downside of the brahmanas, so he said we'll stop the conversation here. We find many, you know, don't want to hear the harsh points of the shastras on the downside of being an outcast. You know, we want to be an outcast but be respected as the, you know, leaders of the society. And our opinion is the valued opinion, rather than the scriptures or God's opinion is the valued opinion. Of course, this all has to be balanced. Rupa Goswami mentions the point, niyamagraha. If we take the rules too far just for the rules, that's wrong. Or if we throw them out because we don't understand them, or we're lazy, or we have some other motives, that's wrong. So there has to be a balance. In other words, the Vedic culture is followed for Krishna. We have faith in Krishna, but we also have faith in fruitive activities. That's the mix here. If you don't have faith in Krishna, there is no alternative but the Vedas. Yes. You find in many of our communities, devotees just say, okay, we've tried all, been there, done that, and, you know, temple life and preaching and this and that, and now we have to get down to the reality of, you know, cultivating a family when we're in our late 40s and early 50s, you know, the realities of life. And, you know, do some, you know, and, you know, we have to get money, so therefore we sell stickers or whatever it is we do, sell hats or, you know, something, do something practical. So then, but then we have faith that this is actually what's going to get us somewhere. That means what hasn't been noted, or which has been sidelined, is that they are 40 years old, or 50 years old, and they didn't starve to death. So that means economic development was going on quite well, since gratification was happening. Otherwise, how are they still alive at that age? They joined when they were in their early 20s or late teens, so for 30 years, they've been maintained quite well. How did that happen, if it was so unrealistic? That's the point. So therefore, it's a faith in materialistic. It means the mind has caught them. There's a dissatisfaction. They're not getting the taste due to some reason. You know, due to being very careful of the weeds. Or, you know, some situation is there. It's very individual for each person why it's there. So one wouldn't want to make generalizations. But the point is that they have taken those up seriously, so they have some faith that that will make them happy. Fruitive activity means it gives a result. That result will make me happy. But there has been no one in the creation who has been happy with a family, with money. There is no such thing as security. You know? This comes up. It's security. What is secure? Right? Okay, you have a family. But then the children go off do what they want to do. You know, generally you see the husband dies before the wife, so then she's left alone anyway, right? She's 20 years old, wants to get married because she doesn't want to be alone. She wants to be secure, right? But when she's 80 years old, she's alone again. You know, so it's just, you know, in between, okay, it was okay, but she's going to be alone anyway. And then the money, what will it buy you? You know, it means you can do something with it. You know, definitely, if it's there, you use it. But it doesn't create security. It hasn't created safety. Never has. I mean, in the 40s, the Jews were very wealthy. It didn't save them. You know? But, I mean, it's just, you know, wherever you go, it's the people are, you know, they were, you know, whatever it is. Money hasn't saved anyone. Families haven't saved anyone. You know, the interactions in the family members haven't made anyone satisfied. No one's been satisfied. Like that is, I mean, satisfied means you've had it, you're happy, you don't need more. But one, it's not gotten, and two, whatever little bit is gotten, one needs more. So satisfaction has never been attained. Therefore, the Vaishnavas don't put their faith in it. They understand it's there. There's a conditioned need. It means the soul doesn't need it, but the conditioned nature needs it. And because the soul identifies with the conditioned nature, therefore it has to be addressed. But how to address that is through the Vedic rituals, the Vedic direction. How to address that? Okay, man wants to associate with woman. How to do that? What does that mean? What is a woman? So if you don't know what a woman is, how you'll associate with one? Right? Just like if you want to associate with fire, you have to know fire. Otherwise you get too close, you get burnt, your clothes are cast on fire. Or you won't take care of the fire, right? Fire is great. Hey, this is nice. Hey, how come the fire is getting smaller? Hey, how come it's cold? Because he didn't know fire, so he didn't know you have to put wood on the fire. Right? So woman's fire. So unless you're putting things there, there is no fire. It goes out. And then men wonder why. Why do the women go cold? Because there's no wood is being put. So there's no fire. So all these things, if you don't know, and who's going to explain? Okay, last 5-10 years, the Westerners have been doing some research into the matter. What is a woman? What is a man? But the conclusions they come up with are exactly the same as what the Vedas have been saying for millions of years. And much deeper, and in a social context rather than simply a scientific context. So therefore, that's why it's said, if one has that, one deals, but according to Krishna's direction. And for what purpose? Not to encourage and increase the material needs, but for the purpose of extinguishing them. I'll deal with it in a regulated way, according to the scriptures, and then with time, that desire will go. It will go. So then that is what does. It's just like, if you can eat whatever you want, whenever you want, however you want, then the whole process keeps going on because you think, I'll do it this way, I'll do it that way, I'll eat this, I'll eat that, and this time, and that time. It just unlimitedly goes on. If we say, okay, every day at 9 and 5, you're going to eat prasadam. You know, and it's going to be this kind of prasadam at 9 and this kind at 5. And that's it. And the rest of the day, you're not going to eat. So then, in the beginning, then you eat so much and everything like that, but how much can you eat, right? You can only eat so much at one time. You know, whatever it is, it can be a near-death experience, but, you know, it has its limit. You know? But then after a while, you see, after 6 months, 1 year, a few years, then you start to control. You don't overeat. You know, your determination, you know, on Monday morning to not kill yourself at the next Sunday feast after some time becomes a reality. You know, in the beginning needs practice, but so it you can control because it's controlled. Therefore, then you can focus, and when you can focus, then you can observe it and see what goes on. But otherwise, if it's uncontrolled, there's nothing. There's no question of reducing. So the whole Vedic system is how to reduce. And so if that's the purpose, then dealing with the fruitive aspects for the purpose of pleasing Krishna, meaning that the results are for Krishna, but at the same time as we need this because of our conditioned nature, then you gradually are freed from it. So that is the whole purpose of the Vedic system, as you mentioned before, to become freed from the material conditioning. That's the whole purpose of it. So if it's done in a regulated way, therefore you get free. Right? If you regulate sex life, you get free from it. People are saying, oh, it's not possible. Because they're not doing it. Therefore they can't get free from it. Right? Unless you control it, you can't get free from it. And then to say it can't be controlled, then means one is not trying in the right way, one is not having the right understanding. Okay. One is not having, So these things then are given in the Vedic literature. So this point is then very relevant. In other words, he's saying is for the non-devotees that they have to follow the Vedas. Otherwise life is sinful. But when they have faith in Krishna consciousness, then they don't need to follow them. But that is someone who has complete faith. He doesn't want fruitive results. Therefore he's not interested in the activities. Yeah? And he has complete faith in the Lord. That person doesn't have to follow. So that's the Hamsa. And if there's some conditioned need, then he follows the rituals of the Vedas in connection with that. Like that. And if he seriously is interested in the fruits, then he definitely has to follow. Like that. So that's, does that make some sense? Okay. Yeah.
I was just wondering, in the proportions of the fruitive mentality of the person, let's say, as devotees, so we might do devotional activities, but we may have the fruitive mentality. So maybe I'm not phrasing myself, so...
We have to keep going. Means, what's your question?
Yeah, my question is that when you say the following the Vedic rituals and so on as devotees, so if
it means in connection as devotees, means that they are there. The Pancharatri gives, the Varnashram gives. Like a devotee wants to get married, right? So I mean, you can look probably. Check very carefully in Harinam Chintamani about the glories of the chanting process of the Bhagavat Mark. You might not find anything about marriage in there. There's a good chance you might, you know, that you know certain essential details may not be contained there. And also, if you look in the process of deity worship, because it's only focused on all the rituals focused on the Supreme Lord, you might not find any detail there either. So then you have to turn to the other Vedic literatures, the Dharma Shastras. But the Dharma Shastras, as given in conclusion with the Bhagavatam. Therefore, then these things like this, the Shraddhas, the other sacrifices, all this is kicked out. So basically, what we take from there is ashram. Right? And then in that ashram, then it's there. And these things are very nicely told how to do. You know, the Vedic literatures also tell, that's the other thing, is that then someone will say, how to avoid, it's impossible to avoid this illicit sex. But the Vedas also tell how to behave as a grihastha, so that it's avoided. You know, it says the simple things that are not done in the West, are not known. You know, one should never see, means the husband should never see the wife undressed. Right? Otherwise it will create agitation. You shouldn't see her when she's, you know, putting oils on her body, decorating her eyes with kajal, you know, that eyeliner. You know, doing various things like this, because they put so much sensuality into it when they do it. It just creates, you know, it's just them being themselves. So let them be themselves by themselves, and the men should do something else. They should never sleep in the same bed. These are all given. The same verses that say that one should only approach the wife when one wants to have a child on certain occasions, you know, then it also tells all these things, how to avoid becoming agitated. So they go together. It's not that it's not taking care of these things. You know, so if one follows, then there's a, you know, does that make some sense? Nyayaratna. I am very pleased when I see your scholarship and sharp intelligence. I have faith in the Vaishnavas. I feel happiness in my heart. Harihara, why should we argue with these people? These people are very great scholars. They are very expert in understanding the scriptures. Whatever we may say to keep our business prosperous, Nimai Pandit is the greatest philosopher and Vaishnava who ever took birth in the land of Bengal. Of this there is no doubt. Now let us cross the Ganges. The day is almost ended. Calling out Haribol, Haribol, Nyayaratna and his companions departed, singing Jaya Sachinanda, the Vaishnavas danced. It's interesting. Whatever we may say to keep our business prosperous, that's one thing. But Nimai Pandit, because they're smartest, so therefore they will be doing shraddhas, this, that. So you know, whatever they will be doing. But it's interesting how he separates that. So here, then he was very means the conclusions of the Vaishnava Siddhanta. To us, it's saying very simple and everything. But one has to understand is these are the conclusions that are given. That are given
in the Vedic literatures. They are very, very essential. We may or may not really appreciate how, because we've been given the essence already, right? You know, just like a child. You know, they get so much already essence. They already get, you know, cream and sandesh and all these different things. But if all you've known is milk and you know there's a little bit of cream, and then to be shown how to just get only the cream, then one understands. So we don't know what the milk is. We don't necessarily know what is all the Vedic literatures that the Bhagavatam has been churned from. And how, you know, Prabhupada has given those in such a way that we are able to accept them and digest them and apply them. So all these different things, these are big, big things in people's lives, in the Vedic literature. Because of this whole thing you mentioned, of the debts. We are here, we owe a debt to people. So because of this debt, then all these different things come up. So then that's why many people can't understand why the Vaishnavas do the things they do, or neglect the things. Why you're not doing all these, you say you're Vedic, but you don't follow all these things. So why is that? So then this all explains very nicely. So this is like a perfect thing of how to present to devotees and also to the non-devotees. And all levels of devotees, how to behave. Any other questions on this? Because we've ended this chapter. Yeah, so we'll start this next time. We'll start this on Thursday. Any other questions? Or? No. We also see here is that he's answered all these questions. We've seen so many discussions and debates, but in none of them, then, insulting the other party was ever a method used. Is that based on the scriptures and based on, you know, one's own thing, one can establish it. It means the Vaishnava Siddhanta can establish itself on itself. We don't. It's not that the other person has to be made look bad, therefore Vaishnavism is good. You understand what I'm saying? I mean, some will base that what we're doing is good because everything else is bad. No, Vaishnavism is good on its own. Then, besides that, other things that you're looking to, then they have these weaknesses. Because if your goal is to be eternally happy, then what you're doing is not the right thing. You know? So just say it's bad and therefore this is good, then it's to put them on equal footing. But the Vaishnava religion is way beyond all other religions. That's the thing, is because it is eternal. It's dealing with the eternal, while everything else is dealing with the temporary.
No, sometimes you see within Vaishnava religion, within Vaishnava religion, different groups with different philosophical ideas about what is the teaching of Krishna. They do just what you're talking about to prove their point.
Yeah, it's not necessary. It's just like we have nothing to say about the Ramanujas and Madhvas and the Embarkas and all that, you know, the Vishnu Swamis, because where they want to go is different than where we want to go. Their process is perfect for getting to that place. We want to go somewhere else. Right? None of them are talking about Braja. They're talking about Vrindavan, they're talking about Vaikuntha. Like this, you know, the Dwarka, like that. Or in Braja, in Vrindavan, then, you know, pastimes of Krishna as a child, you know. Or even Radha Krishna worship, but only in when they're together, not when they're apart. So it's different than what we're going for.
So therefore, because we like this taste, therefore it's good. Of course, one can go through and show going through the realms, it's there, but that's not why, it's that we are attracted by this. Krishna is, means worshipping Krishna because he's God is not real respect. Right? You understand? Because he's God. He's in the post of God, therefore we worship him. But he is a person, you know, is not as important. Because he's God, therefore he's respected. But Vrindavan worship is because he, as a person, is the most wonderful person. That's why he's worshipped. He can be God or not God, that doesn't matter. But he as a person is the most wonderful. Does that make some sense? You know? Like you have a president. Okay, you respect him because he's the president. You don't like the guy at all. So that, even if you like the guy, it's because he's the president. If he wasn't the president, you wouldn't give that kind of respect anyway. He'd just be your friend because you like him. Right? So here, the Vaishnav, the Braja, means is because he's the most wonderful person. Therefore, you like him like that. He can be the president or not, or he can be the God or not. Who cares? If you like the person, you don't care what their position is. You understand? Mm-hmm. Means it's like it's typical, like right. It means the cliche is it's like the son can be, you know, some big person in the government of the state, but the mother couldn't care less about that. She's still going to nag him of why he's not taking care of his health and he's working too hard and, you know, all these different things, and is he, you know, eating regularly and taking his medicine and doing proper exercise. And she's still going to say all these things. It doesn't matter if he's the prime minister of the country. She's still going to say it. Because affection's for him. This is side. Okay, it's a nice fun. She can talk to her friends. Yes, my son's the prime minister. But in relationship with the son, it has nothing to do with prime minister or not. You understand? So that's the thing. Is you like the person because of who he is rather than the position he's in. That makes sense.
So right now it's hard for us to really have that relationship.
Well, no, that's why we hear from the devotees, hear from the scriptures about the Lord and his qualities, his name, form, qualities, pastimes. Therefore, like Krishna book, it was regularly read before. And you read that and this Krishna's a nice guy, you know. Yeah, so then one has to associate with these. So then one appreciates, and then one wants to be involved. Does that make sense? And then one's attracted. Otherwise, then one will just be attracted by whatever else one is doing, and it may not be so as progressive. You know, if it's connected to Krishna, it's good. But if you is also it's like Krishna is there as a person rather than just as the rules. Like that, if that's there, then it becomes more nice. Does that make some sense?
How to see differentiation in Gaudiya Vaishnavism? So many branches.
Means we see is like it's like this. It's like if somebody gives you something, then are we obliged? Right? So then, therefore, if we've come in contact with Gaudiya Vaishnavism through this line, then we're obliged to this line. If we come in contact through another line, then we're obliged over there. The Siddhanta is the same. The philosophy is the same. And just their method of application, one may see some difference. But otherwise, the culture, the philosophy is the same. But the ability to apply it to the situation, especially to the Western situation, you know, and to the preaching, this has been very expertly done by Srila Prabhupada. So because of that, we're here. We're not here because of any other branch of the Gaudiya Vaishnavas. Nobody is around. Even the ones in the West now who are coming up, they're still only there because of this branch. Because any of the Gaudiya Vaishnavas other than ISKCON who are going to the West and preaching and making devotees, if you look at them, they were all previous ISKCON devotees. And they were picked up from where? From nice Brahmin families in India or from the gutters of America? Therefore, this is the... But if someone has come in contact with them, we have no problem. Means we don't go on. It means ISKCON doesn't have its standing because other lines are bad. ISKCON stands on its own. It has its own process, its own everything. So it's complete. It can run with or without the others. So it's not necessary. Therefore, if they're in good standing, there's no need to. They're good because ISKCON's bad. That's not necessary. They're also building temples. They're also flying around the world. That does take money. Money is opulence. So to complain that we're opulent, they're using the same opulence. It's not necessary. It's not necessary. You know, they complain we're mass, not class. But then they're following, if that's bad, they're falling into the same trap. They're going around the world and bringing in mass, not class. You know, at least we have standards of 16 rounds and 4 regulative principles for first initiation. You know, so therefore they have to be careful to not make their standing on that we're useless. Like that. And ISKCON, it's not we're here because everything else. No, it's we're here because of what's positive. You know? It can also be backed up with, yes, material life is useless. But that's it not because it can get... It's not that material life can get you the goal. Right? Material life can get you the goal, and we picked this one. So therefore it's a competition. No, material life can't get the goal we're looking for. It can't answer our spiritual questions. It can't give us lasting happiness. You know, it can't solve the problems of life. Therefore one has to take up spiritual life. So therefore it's not that you're speaking badly about it, it's just that what you want from it, it can't give. Well, the spiritual life can give. Right? So therefore, if one joins any of the lines of the Gaudiya Vaishnava, if they're bona fide, they're parampara, then they can go back to Godhead, there's no problem. So therefore, there's no need to say this one's better than that one. No, it means this is where we've come in contact, this is where our obligation lies. Prabhupada so much of the time was trying to involve the other branches and get them involved in the preaching and this and that. So now they're starting to preach, that's good. So that was the whole idea. It's just that preaching would go on. That's what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur wanted. But we've earned this line, there are obligations in this line. You're born in one family, your obligation's there, not in another family. Right. If you're born in your house and then you leave your father's house and live in your uncle's house, would that be, you know, culture? No, not culture. So that's the point. And this is just general. We're not getting into specifics. You know, we're not discussing, you know, those things. But it's okay, so end here. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki
jai.
Srila Prabhupada ki
jai.